Thank you everyone for coming. I just want to keep this very short for two reasons. One of them, like Vanessa said, there's a talk afterwards, which I'm very keen for you to attend. Someone will do a shout out, so you know the details then. But also because I've got the flu, so I can't really talk or shout for much long. In terms of what happened, I think there's no point in kind of going over the details. I think Rizwan's covered quite a bit of it, and Alan earlier has done as well. But what I will say is, in my dealings with people since I was released, and that includes journalists or people from the university or people from the community here, one question that has come across a lot was, surely it's better to play it safe than to be sorry. And I want to address this first. When it came to my arrest, what happened was, like Rizwan said, I got a call from Rizwan, rang him up, and he said, there's lots of police officers in your office. Is everything okay? I was surprised. I said, I'm not sure what they're doing there, and this is worrying, and it's probably a break-in. And I made my way to campus. I rang up the office, actually, and I said, I'm just to see if everything is okay. They told me everything was fine. I turned up. I was arrested on the spot. I was handcuffed, taken to the police station, searched, then fingerprinted and footprinted, which is a process that takes about 3 hours in total. I was I had a DNA sample taken from me. I was held in a cell for 10 hours before I was asked a single question. All of this, they could have arrested essentially completely the wrong person, as in even if, you know, someone with a similar name, or but they did not ask a single question until about 12, 13 hours into the ordeal. But the point is this: even according to what they did, and even if you agree that it's better to play safe than sorry, then the way they did things was essentially the most idiotic way of doing it, because I knew they were there, and I could easily have disappeared, and I could easily, if I had been a terrorist, been able to cause as much damage as I could, you know, as I wanted to, because I had the warning. In essence, what they did not help anyone be safe, and in fact could have made things much, much worse had I been a terrorist. Luckily, I wasn't. I was just, you know, someone who happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. But the point is, even if the argument that this is simply a way of playing it safe, this is not playing it safe, this is playing it dumb, and the consequences could have been very serious for everyone. So let us not have that kind of really, really kind of grotesque kind of excuse and pretext to hide behind. It doesn't wash. And everything since has told me that the counter-terrorism establishment hasn't got a clue about what he's doing. I was interviewed for 20 hours, and here's the picture. I had my property searched, and they took thousands of documents. Okay, they searched through hundreds of books, journals, my DVD collection, and so on, and you know, everything I had. Okay, and they selected a selection of the most interesting items for them to take to the lab and investigate. Okay, and that particular selection, which is something like 6-7 boxes of stuff, was returned to me when I was released. And the point is this: that selection is essentially the most dangerous of the lot, and it includes Family Guy DVDs, I think it includes cartoon books, it includes music CDs, includes, they do not know what they're doing. It's completely symbolic. It's just an attempt to try and find something after realizing you've made a mistake. And like Alan said, this is not something unusual. When you arrest someone and then you discover you made a mistake, what tends to happen is you try and see if you can find something else, because that's the only way out without losing face, without appearing to be what you are, which is essentially a fairly idiotic police force. And this is, you know, I might sound a bit harsh, but it really is. I had nothing against, you know, I had no prejudices against the police until this happened to me, and I discovered firsthand how things are happening. And I was astonished at basic things, like, you know, they'd be interviewing me, and they'd show me so-called evidence, you know, pieces of paper written in Arabic, and they ask me to tell them what to do, because they haven't got a translator. And I could have told them anything. And the funny thing is this that they ask me about is things like, you know, the pages of poetry, and I'm thinking, are you serious? You haven't got a translator? And I said, well, you know, we've got this, you know, we're having this kind of analysed and so on, but obviously it's taking time, so can you? But the point is this is not making us safe. So this is, it has to be understood that this is a real flaw in the way the counter-terrorism establishment is doing its work. And it's to do with many other factors. One of them is the fact that they haven't got that many kind of able and skilled people to work with, but also because of political pressure. At the time, I mean, we live in times when the police really are under a lot of pressure to appear to be working. And if they arrest someone, it's better than not arresting anyone, because it looks like they're doing something. Now, if you arrest someone, the pressure is really, really heavy on them to essentially reach conviction. It shouldn't be this way. When you arrest someone, the interest to you as a police officer for this to be a conviction or someone to be cleared should be 50-50. You shouldn't care either way. All you should care about is whether what the truth is. Is the person guilty or not? I'll do my job, I'll search, I'll investigate, and then whatever comes out, comes out. But that's not the state we live in. What we live in is a state where it's actually better for you to convict the person. Because if conviction looks like you're doing your job, when you clear someone, it looks like you have arrested someone wrongfully, which is what you would do, and therefore would make you look incompetent. Now, the police arrested us, and within the first day, they knew what the document was. I gave them all my passwords, all my emails, and they could easily establish that me and Rizwan had been in communication for months talking about this PhD proposal. And everything is very heavily documented, and they saw the actual document transfer on the MSN history between me and him. So they knew exactly the circumstances, what he told me before and after he sent me the document, what the reasons were, and they managed to examine every single line of text that was sent between me and Rizwan, whether by phone or email. So they could easily tell what the background and the context of the document was on the first day. Now, what do? Do you either say, we made a mistake, okay, fair enough, or you say, well, maybe we can find something else? They opted for option two because of what I explained, because they wanted the conviction. So for 5 days, they went into everything else, into our lives. They kicked his family and my housemates out of the flat and the house where everyone, where they lived, unceremoniously, just kicked them out for 3 days in my case. I don't know how long it was, for 1 day. But, you know, my housemate was left for 3 days, completely, you know, just had to find somewhere. They didn't even, like, offer some place to stay. They just asked him to kind of bugger off. And the impact on the community is immense. We forget that this is not just you sitting in a room for a few days and, you know, and then you're out if you're innocent, which is how people try and portray it. They say, well, you know, what's the harm? You know, we arrest you, we investigate, you're innocent, you're out. Within a day, the consequences could be fatal for you, in the sense that your family, your name, your reputation, your community, the effect can be completely damaging beyond repair. And by the time you're released and cleared, nobody knows anything, and you know the damage has been done. And in our case, the damage has been done. I mean, you know, from a psychological point of view, I mean, Rizwan can maybe answer questions later about how it has affected him, and it has affected both of us. But also in terms of our loved ones, the people who have nothing to do with this. You know, our parents, you know, our family, our loved ones, our friends, who are worried, who themselves got investigated, who themselves got questioned. And we should not underestimate how damaging this is. Now, the reason the government, for example, is trying to extend the detention limit to 42 days is because it knows most people do not feel they will ever be in this position. This is what they rely on. They say, the average citizen will think this is not going to happen to me. So 42 days, fine. 60, 90, make it 100. It's never going to happen to me. So it's fine. But the effect on those that, you know, to which it does happen is just beyond description. And 42 days, you know, that's a separate debate, but I just wanted to mention it because it's a crucial issue and it links into this. In terms of the campaign and what happens now, after 6 days, clearly nothing was found, and they decided to, you know, come up with something else. And they said, they released us, and within about 10 seconds, they rearrested me, saying, we're arresting you on immigration charges. My first sentence was, this is ridiculous. I just thought this is beyond, you know, incompetence. This is just idiotic. I said, fine, what is it? They gave me the description, the vague description of the charges. I said, fine, you know, I'll fight here in court, I'll win, and then we'll be over. Okay. Instead, what they did was, within a day of them telling me that I'll be rearrested on immigration charges, they had a plane ready for me. You know, amazingly enough, you know, just a plane ticket and everything. You're going back to Algeria, you're being deported. How about having the right to a trial? How about first establishing if indeed there was a problem with my immigration status? You know, that's all I'm asking for. No, you're going to be deported. My solicitors asked, I said, you know, can we do anything? What they were told was, by the Home Office was, short of a decision by the European Court of Human Rights or the House of Lords, this guy's on that plane. What they didn't, you know, take into consideration though, was that this was not a case where the community would stand silent. And what happened was, we had the biggest demonstration in this university's history. And more than 500 people, in the pouring rain, stood there and made their voices heard by just being silent. And they essentially made the point that we know about this case, we know that injustice is being committed as we speak, and we're not going to let it pass. And the effect, the media exposure, essentially made it extremely hard for the Home Office to get away with it. And then we had time, we mounted the legal challenge, and it was successful, and we were able to stop the deportation. And the key thing is, I didn't do any of this. Had I been any normal citizen who did not have the network of support and the community behind me that I did, any other person would have been on that plane. And injustice would have been committed, and very few people would have heard of it. And this is the thing, this is the state we live in. We need to be aware that this is happening. And since then, since I've been in detention, since I was released on bail, and since the campaign has been going on, what I've been facing now is a war of attrition. What the Home Office does is just delays things, hearing after hearing after hearing, you know, week upon week upon week. I'm not allowed to travel, I'm not allowed to work, and what they rely on is simply for me to just give up, because simply money runs out, patience runs out, friends and family, you know, they just can't take it anymore, and this is what they hope will happen. And this is why the campaign has been trying to kind of continue, because what they want to do is to ensure I get a fair chance to fight my case. And well, all I want to say is essentially, I mean, thank you, of course, for you know, sparing the time and for your interest in the case, and thank you for those of you who've been with the campaign since the first days or maybe later, for your commitment and your support. And me and Rizwan will answer questions, and I hope this will give you some food for thought. And I thank you again.